From Norwalk to New Canaan, from Monroe to Milford, Fairfield County listens to the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
Welcome back. I've just heard the news that President Trump has been banned indefinitely from Facebook, which also includes Instagram, since Facebook owns Instagram. Joining us now is Paula Boggs, who was a classmate of mine. That's the word I was looking for. She subsequently went on after getting an ROTC scholarship and doing all kind of fabulous things of her extraordinary physical fitness in the military. She went on to become the general counsel of Starbucks for a long time. Then she found her way to a successful music career, where she is now on the board of the National Governors Association. I think she might even choose who gets to get a Grammy. She's had a wide-ranging, fabulous career doing all kinds of marvelous things and many, many different nonprofit volunteer organizations, including being a trustee of our common alma mater, Johns Hopkins University. And Paula Boggs, I'm so happy to have you back on the show. I know you from way back when. I'm so impressed with you. But I have to tell you that when you wrote about what the Georgia elections meant to you, it really touched me, and I wanted you to share that story with our audience. Welcome.
Thank you, Lisa. And it's so great to even virtually be back in Connecticut. I love your state. I was really moved to write about my family's story, my family's Georgia story, in the wake of the recent Georgia special election for the U.S. Senate. And I was moved because it was emotional for me, but I was also moved to write it because I think it's very important for a diversity of Americans to hear these stories. And, you know, in a nutshell, my story is this. My family has lived in the state of Georgia for about 200 years. My ancestor, Emily Latimer, was sold from Virginia to Georgia in the early 1800s. And, you know, and with that starts my family's Georgia story. And for my mother, at least on my mother's side, it really encompasses both sides of her family, her father's family and her mother's. And, you know, the whole journey from slavery to, you know, 100 years of Jim Crow is my family's story on my mother's side. And, you know, the story of escape of my grandparents fleeing Georgia and Jim Crow in 1940, you know, for, you know, what they considered the promised land, which for them, you know, as far as their money could take them, was Washington, D.C., to create a better life for my mother. And it was, in fact, in Washington, D.C. I was born. And so there is a direct line from those very dark times of slavery to who I am today. And so when Reverend Warnock won, and, you know, like me, Reverend Warnock is the progeny of slaves. Unlike me, he was born in Georgia, schooled in Georgia, one of 11 or 12 children, I think. He is currently the pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, which was Martin Luther King's church. The beauty of that moment, what it is for Georgians, but, you know, by extension, all of us who have any tie to Georgia was just overwhelming. You know, I must say, Lisa, I didn't know when I wrote my Facebook post about the enormous symbolism of John Ossoff winning, who was the other Democratic candidate who won a Senate seat 2 days ago. John Ossoff is a millennial, of course, but he's also Jewish. And what I learned was in 1915, a Jewish man, Leo Frank, was lynched in Georgia. And that lynching led to the founding of the Anti-Defamation League. And so it is also an amazingly celebratory moment for the Jewish community that John Ossoff is, you know, a son of the South, is going to the U.S. Senate.
It's just extraordinary. A Black and a Jew on the same day. It was just in the same election. It was just from Georgia, the Deep South. It said so much about, well, frankly, the transformation of the Deep South. It said a lot about the people in the South themselves willing to elect these two people on that day. Unbelievable.
Yes. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, there is often, in my view, too much noise about tension between the African-American community and the Jewish community in the United States. And what the example of Warnock and Ossoff running together also, I think, symbolized was, look, you know, these communities have more in common than not. And, you know, let's get real about this. So, I love how they interacted with each other, how, you know, you really got a sense of team whenever you saw them together or heard one talking about the other. And I think that, too, was a very beautiful thing about this campaign and election.
We're chatting with Paula Boggs. Paula, I want to ask how you have been able to trace your own family ancestors to Emily Latimer. What documents, or is it all oral history passed down from one generation to the other? How do you know to trace your own heritage back to Emily?
Oh, it's an amazing story. Emily Latimer was the, I guess the term of art would be the mammy of a little white girl in Hancock County, Georgia, where she was a slave. She took care of this little girl, and that girl grew up and wrote a book about her, her life in Georgia, and talked about Emily, her housekeeper and Manny. And so we learned about Emily, a lot of details about Emily because someone wrote about her.
Amazing.
For example, it was in that book that a reader can learn that Emily learned to read, you know, at age 70. In the wake of, you know, companies like, you know, Ancestry.com, you know, they provide tools for people to do more research. And my family has done that. And from that research, we have seen the documents of slavery. We have seen Emily and her children, which includes my great-grandmother's mother, who were, you know, listed as property on slave rolls in Hancock County, Georgia. And it was through these documents that, you know, are housed today in the courthouse of Hancock County, Georgia, that we learned that Emily's daughter, my great-great-grandmother, was not born free for, you know, 100 years. My family had thought Eliza, her daughter, was born free. But when I saw the slave records, I saw that she was on a 1860 ledger listed as property, which meant, oh my God, she was born a slave. We had never known that, and thus my great grandmother Horty, who was born in 1896, and who I knew that, you know, when you and I were attending Johns Hopkins,
right.
My great grandma Horty was still alive. She did not die until the year I graduated from law school. And so I knew her. I mean, she, you know, so I have a direct line to, you know, that first generation of my family free, because I knew Mama Horty. And, you know, and I was an adult when she died. It wasn't as if I was, you know, a little kid. I was an adult. So, you know, when people say, well, slavery was a long time ago, well, no, it really wasn't, because, you know, my Mama Horty was born she was free, quote unquote, but, you know, she was born a sharecropper on the same property that her, you know, mother and grandmother had been slaves. It was the same property. You know, the marketing changed, the nomenclature changed. You know, so what had been a slave before the Civil War was now a, quote, sharecropper. But these people were doing the same thing. They did the same work. They weren't paid for the work they did. And, you know, with my family, it wasn't until sort of around 1915 or so that part of my family moved off the plantation and to Athens, Georgia, where my great grandma was a maid at the University of Georgia for a number of years.
Wow. What a story. What a story. And so your great grandma, your great great grandma, Eliza, she was born a slave but became free because of the Emancipation Proclamation. But what you're saying is her life didn't dramatically change from being a slave to being free. Yeah. I think that's the case for a lot of people. A lot of the people around down south, it just didn't. And of course, when there were immediate efforts to maybe change them, then you had the Jim Crow laws and you had the backlash. And so they were kept down.
Yes. And, you know, on my mother's side, I have not been able to find any records of voter registration, you know, because of course there was that small window of time between the end of the Civil War and the beginning of Jim Crow, which was about 7 years, mm-hmm. where, you know, some Black people, you know, registered to vote. And that is the story on my dad's side in Alabama. He, hit my dad's ancestor as soon as he legally could register to vote in Alabama, did vote in Alabama in one election, only to have that right stripped away by virtue of Jim Crow.
So, Paula, we're chatting with Paula Boggs. I love hearing your family story. It's phenomenal. I feel like I'm watching that program on television, Roots. Not the Roots, but you know, the one that Henry Gates does. You know, it's great.
You're
painting a beautiful picture. So I just want to say you're a lawyer, right? You're an officer of the court, as am I. What did you, what was your take on yesterday and the storming of the Capitol and all of that? How do you view it through your lens?
You know, Lisa, I must share this with your listeners because, you know, I'm not just a lawyer. My first jobs as a lawyer were as a military officer working in the Pentagon and then in the White House working on the Iran-Contra investigation. And after my military service, I became a federal prosecutor and was a federal prosecutor for 5 years in Seattle, which is where I now live. And I was born in Washington, D.C. I mean, Washington, D.C. was the home, the adopted home of my grandparents, my mom. It's the only home she really knew. It's where I was born. Issues, I mean, things like rule of law mean a lot to mm-hmm. me. And it's not a partisan thing for me. I have worked for 4 presidents. When I was a military officer, Ronald Reagan was president, and I worked in his White House as a military officer, as a federal prosecutor. George Herbert Walker Bush was the president of the United States. I did investigative work under the Clinton administration, and I volunteered for Obama. So, you know, I have served 4 presidents, and I'm a singer-songwriter, so I have a great imagination mm-hmm. and capacity for imagination, but I could never have envisioned the acts of domestic terrorism, and I can't really describe it any other way, visited upon one of our most sacred national institutions, the Congress, our Congress building, the Capitol, and the arrogance and sense of entitlement that I saw captured in the photographs and video images I saw on TV. I guess my biggest takeaway is this is what happened yesterday is the largest attack on our nation's capital, on one of our national institutions since 9/11.
Yeah.
And that's how I view it. As I read the reactions of leaders of other democracies around the world, they're horrified and they're fearful because if something like that can happen in the United States, the oldest democracy and most enduring democracy on the planet, then, you know, Macron is thinking, I'm sure, this could happen here.
And I'm sure Xi Jinping is saying, and I'm sure Xi Jinping is saying things like, you think America is a land of democracy, Hong Kong protesters? You're wrong. There's no democracy there. Yeah, I know. And it's going to undermine other people's attempts to be free around the world. It isn't so much our quote unquote reputation as it is what it does to the morale of people around the world who live subjugated under so many other tyrannies. It's a terrible thing.
Yes.
Terrible. Well, yes. Paula Boggs, I could talk to you forever, But unfortunately, my producer is saying, no, we got to go to a break. So I'm going to have to say goodbye. But I want to thank you so much for sharing your family story, your insight, your wisdom, and your perspective today. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Lisa. Thanks for the service you do by hosting your program. I'm thrilled to have been a guest on it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Paula Boggs on the Lisa Wexler Show. We'll be right back.